For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. In the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, it's perhaps worth remembering that the leading cause of death in Australia remains cardiovascular disease. Assessing risk for people with a family history of cardiovascular disease is an important tool for early prevention and lifestyle modification. A group of researchers from the Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute have studied whether coronary artery calcium scoring is a tool worth adding to routine screening practice in Australia, particularly for patients not yet on statin therapy who might be considered at medium risk. Professor Tom Marwick is director of the Baker Institute, and Dr. Prasanna Venkataraman is the lead author of that study. They are my special guests today. Let's start with the very basics, because this is a pretty technical area for those of us who are not cardiologists, I suspect. What is coronary artery calcium scoring?
So coronary calcium scoring is a means of quantifying the amount of calcium in the coronary arteries on a CT scan.
Mm-hmm.
It is inherently quantitative, so there is a particular number that is gathered from the amount of calcium, and it is very strongly linked to the total burden of atherosclerosis in the coronary vasculature. So it's a marker of the actual presence of disease. As the arteries become diseased with atheroma, the atheroma calcifies. I think there's a misunderstanding that this is necessarily a late stage in atherosclerosis. I think, you know, I was taught at medical school many decades ago that this was evidence of late disease. That's not true. The amount of calcium that we can pick up here is really at the micro level.
Right.
And that does occur quite early in the disease. You could think of it as kind of a reflection of the total atherosclerotic burden, the exposure to the degree and the number of years of risk factors, and also the ability or otherwise of the body to protect itself against the disease.
And if somebody has a calcium score of 50, say, does that tell you accurately every time what kind of disease risk they've got?
Yeah, that's a good question. So three numbers that I think are important are 0, 100, and 400. So 0 means no calcium, very likely, almost certainly no coronary disease. The exclusion to that is that you can get younger people with non-calcified plaque.
Right.
So the test doesn't work so well in people less than the age of 40 for that reason. But basically it means that if you've got a coronary calcium score of 0, your chance of getting having a coronary event in the next decade or so is very, very low. So that's an intensely reassuring result. And, and that's very pertinent to one of the findings in this paper, which is that people who had people with a family history and risk factors, half of them had a coronary calcium score of 0. Very reassuring finding. The second number that's important is 400. So 400 is usually a marker of pretty significant disease. Keep in mind the coronary calcium score is a reflection of what's going on in the coronary vessel, in the vessel wall. And when we talk about significant coronary disease, we're usually talking about the severity of stenosis. So these two things are obviously linked, but they're not the same thing. People with a coronary calcium of 400 very likely have significant disease. The number 100 reflects a group of people where there are pretty strong grounds for intervening on them with lipid-lowering medications. Now, there are also grounds for intervening on less than 100, but 100 is a pretty significant cut point. Now, the last thing I would add to the numbers is that there are normal ranges for age. So as people grow older, the amount of calcium increases, and so a calcium score of 50 in a 70-year-old is completely unremarkable. A calcium score of 50 in a 40-year-old is evidence of subclinical disease that needs some further thought. So you do need to overlay age as well. But just on the basis of numbers alone, there are some indicative numbers that I think are useful in decision making.
So is calcium scoring used routinely in Australia?
No, it's really not. And I think, you know, part of the problem is that it's not reimbursable. If you want to have a calcium score, you can go to a radiology practice. They'll charge you some variable amount of money. And because of that, you know, obviously some people can afford that, but there's many people at risk of coronary disease who in whom that's difficult, and it means that that information is not available to them.
Okay, so it's not about it being controversial, it's about it being not accessible, particularly in terms of finances.
Yeah, I think the rationale for it not being accessible is that there was a feeling probably 10 years or so ago that it was controversial and that this, you know, wasn't incremental to the to risk factor status. I think in the meantime, a lot of information from really large studies has come to the fore that shows that it doesn't necessarily travel with risk factors. So it adds something on top of risk factors. So there's something that we're not capturing with the standard risk factors that the coronary calcium score is capturing.
The one thing I just might add is the calcium score, and this might be getting a little bit too technical, is measured in terms of what we call Agatston unit. And so that is a measure of both the area of calcium that we see on this CT scan, but also about the density of the calcium in the CT scan. So it's a combination of the two. And there is some research that maybe there might be other variables, and that, you know, the more dense the calcium is, actually maybe the more protective. So there might be phenotypes of the way calcium is stored and deposited that might indicate risk of having a future event. But at the moment, what we generally do is the Agatston unit is the way that it's expressed. And just on that, Tom was saying, it's very unlikely that you can still have calcium, or you can still have soft non-calcified plaque in the young. But in general, those above the age of 35, even young people, we would expect 90% of people who have plaque above the age of 35 to have some calcium,
right?
Even if it's a small amount. But there is definitely that risk that young people will have non-calcified plaque. But it's still a minority.
Given that it's not routinely used in Australia to assess CVD risk, is there a danger that we're missing people who should be on treatment but we're not picking up in screening, say?
Yeah, I personally think so. We focus this particularly on the people with a family history, but because they're a particular problem. I mean, I think most cardiologists would see at least one or two people a week in that situation. You know, my dad died when he was 55 and I'm 54 and I'm up, and what should I do kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that is we targeted it to address that particular question. But in general, I think the issue, and Press will talk to this about risk in some more detail, the issue are the people at so-called intermediate risk. So at the moment, there's a lot of hand-wringing about what to do with those folk, whether they should start on statins or not. And the calcium scoring is a means of really recategorizing them. If they have calcium, then they probably are behaving like a high risk and they should be treated.
Right.
And if they have no calcium, then they're a low risk and they shouldn't. And to us, that is kind of the easiest way of getting to use this.
And given that, as you say in the paper, fewer than 30% of high risk Australians are on statin therapy, that would seem to be a fairly important thing to do.
Oh, we think it's so important to
do.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Pras, tell us a little bit about the study itself, why you decided to go the way you went with the design, and what you were trying to bring to light.
This is a study that analysed the screening data of the CORT-CAD study. Now, the CORT-CAD study is ultimately also an interventional trial to assess the value of coronary calcium score to help guide statin treatment in those at intermediate risk who have a family history of coronary artery disease. And so as part of this study, we assessed everybody who had a intermediate risk, but a sort of a low to borderline to intermediate risk threshold of greater than 2 to 15% five-year risk on the Australian risk score, and who had a family history. So this is a threshold that is lower than what the current treatment criteria for statins is under the current Australian guidelines. So the current Australian guidelines, which was last developed in 2012, would say that those that have a family history and a five-year risk greater than 10% should be on a statin, and that those underneath 10% in general, it's lifestyle modification and treatment in the first instance. So what we did is that we looked at a more broader subset, because there is a feeling that those that have a family history are at higher risk of having a future cardiovascular event and may be missed by traditional risk tools, such as the Australian risk score, which doesn't include family history as part of its risk prediction. And we screened all of these individuals with a coronary calcium score, And those that had any coronary calcium score between 0 and 400 were randomized to a statin and a non-statin. And this trial is ongoing and will hopefully finish by the end of this year, and the results will be published hopefully next year. But my study is looking at the screening data. So we screened about 1,060 individuals and looked at the distribution of calcium scores amongst the whole population, and also assessed what is the value and the accuracy and sensitivity of Australia's current risk prediction tool and Australia's current risk treatment threshold in identifying those both who have disease, as well as those who are likely to benefit from statin therapy. And the impetus for this is a couple of things. One is that Australian guidelines was last updated in 2012, and I think they're currently undergoing update of these guidelines over the next year, which I think makes our study and this report timely. Compared to international guidelines have changed and reduced the threshold for where we consider statin treatment. And I think part of that reflects both reducing statin costs and therefore the more cost effectiveness of preventing cardiovascular disease through statin therapy, the multitude of evidence that statins are effective. So statins reduce coronary artery disease by at least 25% per millimole reduction in your LDL. And of course, there is really good long-term safety data for statins nowadays. And so while international guidelines have started to reduce and have much lower thresholds for considering statins in individuals based on their predicted risk, the Australian guidelines are somewhat a bit outdated and have a relatively higher threshold compared to them. And so this study looked at both how international guidelines fare and also how other risk tools fare. Yes. So the Australian risk tool is based on a Framingham risk score, which is a tool that was developed in the late 1990s, sort of early 2000s, based on the famous Framingham cohort. Yeah. And subsequently, current American guidelines have replaced the Framingham risk tool with what we call a pool cohort equation. The Australian risk tool uses the Framingham risk score, but has calibrated that to Australian mortality rate. Right. But ultimately, the underlying model and the underlying development of the tool and the biases and the problems of the Framingham risk tool ultimately is still part of the current Australian tool. And whether the calibration of the Framingham risk tool to an Australian population overcomes or corrects those defects is a little bit unclear, and that was part of this study. So how does the Australian risk compare to international risk scores when it comes to predicting the presence of coronary artery calcium in our cohort?
I'm chatting with Professor Tom Marwick and Dr. Prasanna Venkataraman from Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute about coronary artery calcium scoring. Their research can be found at mja.com.au, where it is open access. We have another new podcast out this week in which we talk with Adjunct Professor Annabelle Farnsworth about cervical screening and her team's win in the MJA MDA National Prize for Excellence in Medical Research. You can find it at mja.com.au/podcasts. Back to our chat.
In a secondary component to that is also looking at whether these risk tools are and how accurate they are in a population such as QuartCAD, who all have a family history of premature coronary artery disease. So most risk tools don't include family history of coronary artery disease, and some do. Part of that is because part of family history would be related to environmental exposures, part of that is genetic, and part of that will be manifested through the presence of traditional risk tools. So there's been conflicting evidence on major studies whether the addition of family history adds anything beyond the standard risk factors such as high blood pressure, cholesterol, age, gender, smoking status to predicting people's risk. So that's a long-winded explanation of the purpose of the study. And so what we did is that we got people's risk factor profile at basis, and then I calculated on 7 publicly available risk tools, I calculated the predicted risk for every individual across these 7 risk tools, and then compared them to a predicted model, compared their ability against each other to identify those who are likely and not likely to have a calcium score, are likely to have positive calcium. And what we found was that the Australian risk tool actually didn't perform better than international tools, such as a newer international tool, such as the European score and the American pool cohort equation when it came to identifying those who will and who are less likely to have coronary artery calcium scores. So there was slight, they outperformed the Australian risk tool. The benefit is incremental in terms of their ability to identify risk. But what it does and what it did, I guess what it reinforces, is that the problems with traditional risk tools, in particular Framingham risk tool, which the concern was that it consistently over-predicted risk in individuals, so it would tell people your risk is much higher than it actually was, is probably carried through to the current Australian risk tool. And we had tested this a couple of ways. What we did was we compared what a 10-year risk for the Australian risk tool is, predicted risk, and then compared that to a validated tool called the MESA risk tool, which is developed in America but validated international cohorts, including a European cohort, and that includes your coronary calcium score and can give you a 10-year predicted risk. And what we found was that the Australian risk score, in terms of their predicted 10-year risk of having a cardiovascular event, was consistently higher than what the MESA risk tool predicted.
Did those results surprise you at all?
I think there's a few things in terms of the results that were surprising. I think at the base of it, we were surprised that the Australian risk score over-predicted by a large amount. I think we were significantly surprised that despite having family history and a few risk factors, that more than 55% of our cohort did not have any calcium. But we were also surprised, given that the threshold for treatment of calcium, and 100 is becoming a really good marker, we would generally say that your risk of having a cardiovascular event over 10 years, and that's a hard cardiovascular event, so needing like having a heart attack or a cardiac death or a stroke, was greater than 10%. And so that would indicate statins would reduce your 10% risk of having an event down to maybe 6% if you get a good response. And that that would be a number needed to treat up 20 people. So you would treat 20 to 25 people and you could reduce, and you could save at least one of those individuals from having the need for a serious medical event and avoid a serious medical event.
Yeah.
That the median risk for those individuals was 6%. So at our current treatment thresholds of 10%, we're missing over half the population with a family history of coronary artery disease who would, arguably derive some benefit from statins.
What would you like to see happen next, Tom? Maybe what would you, if you had a magic wand, say, what would you like to fix about the Australian guidelines?
Oh, look, I think there's probably two things. The first is that we need to incorporate coronary calcium scoring as part of our guidelines. This has been recommended in a CT scanning document from the Cardiac Society, but I think most people in general practice would be unaware of it. And without engagement from the MBS, for the reasons I mentioned earlier, I just think it's not going to happen. So I think it's important to realise that people in this very large intermediate risk group, at the moment we are really flying blind, and some of them are reclassified to high risk and some of them are reclassified to low risk. And so it's not an issue of giving statins to all of them, because that would be wasteful. It's an issue of understanding their risk more so as to be smarter about giving statins. So I think that's the first point. And the second point is that we do need to reconsider using the Australian risk calculator. I just think, other jurisdictions have moved on from using pure Framingham data, and we're behind there. And I think you can see the consequences of it in PRASS's data. So I think that we should seriously think about using the pooled cohort equation or some other international calculator.
Prasso, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I second much of what Prof said. And I think it is a really difficult area, because as you lower risk thresholds, you subject people to perhaps needing or treating people with statins who don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
having some clear guidelines around use of coronary calcium scoring and a subsidy, and maybe having clear directions of who would benefit from calcium scoring to make it a bit more tenable from a policy intervention or from developing a policy proposal, I think is worthwhile. And just using this current Australian risk score, part of the problems what we found with our study is that the old Framingham risk scores, included outcomes that were not necessarily hard outcomes, so they included outcomes such as anybody who had a stent, which doesn't necessarily which is open up to a lot of clinical decision making and a bit of clinical uncertainty as to, you know, why, or anybody who had a diagnosis of a heart related issue from a hospital, which may or may not be a true event. And so some of the newer risk tools, what they've done is that they've limited their outcomes to validated hard outcomes.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the best way to go when it comes to developing a new risk tool, because that just ensures that your risk prediction algorithms are better geared towards hard events that are actually going to affect people's lives and are relevant. And I think particularly in people with a family history, I think having a focus on them and acknowledging that these are individuals who come to their GP or come to their cardiologist wanting to know what their cardiovascular risk is, because that's the thing that is most relevant to them.
Yes.
And probably their biggest risk in terms of their, you know, short to medium term health, given that their family history. And that having a sense that maybe these are individuals who may benefit from more aggressive assessment with a coronary calcium score,
yeah,
is worthwhile and should be considered.
Are you expecting a big reaction when your paper comes out?
I think it will be looked upon as being controversial. Yes,
okay.
I do. I think, first of all, coronary calcium scoring, I think, has been dismissed in some circles as just a reflector of existing classical risk factors, which is untrue, but I think some people still believe that. And I think that there will be pushback against changing from the current risk calculator. And obviously, we would much rather be in a position of having an outcome study in order to show what we're proposing on the basis of the coronary calcium. That's unfortunately all we have. But I hope it's an impetus for somebody else to pick it up, to who has got outcome data in an existing community-based study. For example, Busselton,
yep,
would be one possibility. Where it's possible to look at the impact of the full cohort equation or something else similar that would move us on. But, you know, there's obviously inertia issues in moving from one risk calculator to another. People have to retool and so on. But
mm-hmm.
On the other hand, when you get to the stage that you're the only significant jurisdiction that's still working off the Framingham data set, then,
yeah,
then maybe it's a time to reconsider.
One of the benefits of calcium scoring is also the ability to trigger GPs and change patients and GPs' behaviour in,
yeah,
terms of if somebody does have a calcium score of zero, you know, that could be a motivating tool to get them to continue doing their things, but also their good behaviours, or people have a calcium score to help motivate them to change their adverse lifestyle behaviours. There is evidence that once a GP understands that they've got a calcium score, it triggers the use of or considerations of statins. And so I think that the value of calcium score is not just in risk prediction and guiding and identifying who will and who will not benefit from therapy, but changing the behaviour of those involved in the clinical decision making. And ultimately, the future is personalising healthcare to the individual, and the calcium scores can give individuals and their GPs a sense of how risk factors have changed and,
yeah,
what the impact risk factors have. So there's plenty of evidence that those that have multiple risk factors, if their calcium score is zero, they still have an excellent prognosis. And I think that is definitely where the value in calcium scoring is as well, in helping inform that decision of when to go with lifestyle, when to go with medical treatment, or being more aggressive in intervening early with medical treatment and providing a kind of whole system approach to preventing coronary disease.
The status quo is feeling a little uncomfortable at the moment. I,
yeah,
wish to change it. Thanks for your interest. Really appreciate it.
No problem at all. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Prasa. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.